Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. Once again, I am Terry Foy, joined by a Division I head coach as we talk about recruiting on the eve of September 1st. And this time, I'm talking to Providence head coach, Bobby Benson. Coach Benson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Excited to talk a little bit about recruiting and lacrosse with you.
So I think we met in 2006, maybe 2005. Which year were you at UMBC, 2005 or 6?
I was at UMBC in 04 and 05, and I went to Loyola in 2006.
So we met when you were at Loyola, and then you went to Johns Hopkins in 2007, your alma mater, where you had graduated from in 2004, correct?
Yes, I graduated in 2003, and then I spent 04 and 05 at UMBC and 06 at Loyola, yeah. And we definitely met in 2006 in the offices at, I guess it was Loyola College.
Then, it was.
But I was at Loyola College.
Yeah. So
the old offices.
The old office. There, yes, the old office is the right way
they
to describe
it. They're so gorgeous. They're great offices up there.
But I share that because then you took over as the offensive coordinator of your alma mater. We had developed a good relationship. We loved to talk lacrosse with each other. And from about 2007 to 2020, I would ask you about recruiting. And you would essentially say, I don't recruit. I always took you not at your word and just decided that that was you being coy. But you don't have that excuse anymore. This is your program, man. You lead the show. You run the ship.
The more under the radar I could fly, the better. I guess when you're the head coach, you got to make those decisions instead of just recommendations. But, we're super excited. We're super excited about what we have here at Providence, and we're excited about the classes that we have coming in the future of Friar lacrosse, for sure.
No doubt. So there's a lot of meat on the bone. Generally, this is the ninth of the first 10 of these recruiting conversations that, I had targeted as conducting through the month of August. And the first handful were pretty formulaic or similar in format. Basically, the first half of the conversation was about how do you evaluate, and then the second half of the conversation was about how do you communicate with prospects. And I think we're going to get into some of that. More recently, it's been a little bit more linear, a little bit more chronological, and getting into a little bit of the unique circumstances. And one of the elements and the reason I wanted to talk to 10 different coaches is because there are 10 conferences in Division I, and the way in which they recruit, the way in which the 76, 77 programs recruit is so there's so much variety within it. Even within conferences, there's a lot of variety. I'm sure the way that you recruit relative to the way that Georgetown and Denver recruit bear some similarities, and they also bear some stark differences. But at the very least, relative to some of the other conferences in the country, there are fewer differences, and so that's kind of why I wanted to segment it out that way. But also, the unique circumstance of the coach, the staff, and their position dictates some of that as well. So, clearly, with your being new to the Providence, landscape, so to speak, this being your second season as the head coach, I would imagine that there's a lot of learning and a lot of getting your feet wet and becoming more familiar, that is going on. So that's where I want to start, which is basically what's the difference between right now versus this time last year?
Well, I think we're a lot more prepared right now compared to this time last year. When we got hired, we were trying to finish a 23 class and get started on a 24 class and figure out how we're going to order pens and get our computers actually synced up so that we could log into the Providence College Network. So we had a lot going on. I think you're probably stricken from a fire hose for your first 2 or 3 years. So I don't know if we're completely settled in. There's still a lot that we have going on, but I do feel like we are a little more organized, a little more prepared, which is a positive, I think.
So with that, I would imagine some confidence, some calmness, some sense of security comes with it. What does that look and feel like? Now that you have your feet under you, what does it mean in terms of how you're approaching the beginning of the recruitment of the class of 25?
I think the approach is probably the same. And even though we might have been scrambling a little more last year, I think that we kind of kept the same mentality. And I think that mentality, even as we came in with a lot of 2023s recruited and just finishing up. And what we have in the 24 mentality right now is we still finish that class. We want to find players that are going to help us compete for Big East championships. We want to find players that are going to help us compete at a national level. They can come to us in the early September, and we had commitments in the 24 class in early September. They can come to us, you know, the summer before they get here, and we had that too. All of them are good as long as we can find guys that are going to help us compete at the level that we want to compete. And I think we try to keep that in focus and not make it a timeline, not make it this has to happen now. So whereas we may feel like we're more organized and we have a little better handle in the group, I don't know if our necessary strategy is going to change or, you know, what we want to accomplish is going to change.
What did you learn in your conversations with the 23s and 24s that committed to you about what appeals about Providence to a high school prospect?
You know, all the coaches up here at Providence kind of say the same thing. And it's when people come up here and look around, it's an awesome place and it's really appealing and attractive. And the important thing for us is just to get in front of student athletes and kind of show them what we have to offer. Because I think it's really neat. And that's kind of what we try to do. We just want to put our best foot forward, let them see why Providence is such a successful athletic department, why their athletic, why their hockey team does really well, the soccer team does really well, basketball. Obviously, there's a ton of sports here that do awesome. And, you know, and why we're taking great strides as a lacrosse program. And, you know, I think that when people come to campus and they see the enthusiasm on campus for Providence College, I think that's something that is really special. So we want to bring them up, show them campus, and let them kind of see for themselves what we get to see every day.
I think for lacrosse fans, you're regarded as a little bit of an offensive wizard, where you're a coordinator who knows how to scheme up and develop, right? Whether that's, you know, developing players or developing tactics that, you know, X's and O's on the chalkboard that translate to success on the field. But, you know, what's interesting in terms of where I think that perception might have a gap is, you know, I know how, you know, some of the players that were most successful that you coached, you know, you had such a close bond and relationship with them. You know, one that stands out is Wells Stanwyck. And so I think that there's kind of this dual nature to your approach, which is an acute understanding of the game as well as understanding the value of developing those types of bonds and relationships. How close is that perception, or how accurate am I? And then also, you know, if I am pretty accurate, how does it hit your ear relative to how you try to develop relationships with prospects in the recruiting process?
You know, I think the coaching profession is probably a relationship-based profession. I think that that's kind of the secret to success in a lot of ways. You know, when I hired the staff here, you know, one thing that I say and one thing that I said when they were interviewing me, the athletic director, you know, I want lacrosse to be the best 2 hours of their day. I want them to love it. You know, we work really hard, and lacrosse coaches don't get paid a ton of money, so we work really hard. We better have fun doing it, and it's got to be fun. And along with that, we've got to really like each other, because if we really like each other, it's going to make it more fun, and it's going to allow us to operate at the highest level. If we know what people are comfortable with, if the student athletes feel like they have the ability to play freely, to go make plays, to be creative, to be innovative, and know that we have their back, if we know that they're on the same page as us in terms of their dreams, goals, and visions, and kind of what they want to accomplish, that's how we're going to operate the best. So I think the relationships are really important to that. And, you know, that's kind of probably the center of what we try to do, even as a coaching staff. And that does start in the recruiting process. We want to find student athletes that are going to share those same dreams, goals, and visions. We want to find ones that we're going to love to coach and that are going to love to play with for us or with us and, you know, fit in the locker room. And I think that's really important. Someone told me once that, you know, you have to recruit people that fit you and people that, you know, really share your drive. You know, and they were using somebody as an example that wanted, you know, all like tough, rough around the edges people, and this is how they get it done, and that's awesome. And they were kind of like, what fits you? And I was like, you know, I like people, and I want to coach people and recruit people that just love lacrosse, right, and love playing lacrosse. And I think that's something that we look for sure. We want people that are lax rats that absolutely love it, you know, as we are. And I think that helps kind of form that bond and relationship.
Why do you love lacrosse, and in what way?
That's a good question. I mean, I've been around lacrosse my whole life. I think I was one of the guys with a stick in a crib. You know, it's just something that I've been passionate about, something that I've really enjoyed throughout my career. It's been really good to me. I have a ton of relationships through lacrosse. So I absolutely love it. I love thinking about it. I love coaching it. I love talking about it. And, you know, I think I relate well with people that share that same passion. And so the more we can kind of bring that to Friartown, I think the better off we're
going to
be.
I think that going back to that 2006 meeting was what helped create the foundation for that friendship. But you brought up your staff, and I think it's important for folks to be familiar with who they are, what their roles are. And if you would, and I know that I'm asking you to speak for them, so to the best that you can you just give us a little bit of insight into how each of your assistants loves lacrosse and the manner in which they are uniquely a lax rat separate from how you are a lax rat?
Yeah, Casey Broderson's our associate head coach. He does the defense. He came to us from Bryant. You know, I did not know Casey overly well before we started working together, but I knew that Bryant was always overachieving, and he was a grinder on the recruiting trail and a really, really hard worker. And I think that probably shows his passion, drive, and commitment. He's a guy that's in the office early all the time. And, you know, he just has that drive and that love for it that that really stands out to me. And he does a great job with the defense. He does a great job with the recruiting. And I'm super fortunate to have him with us. Carol Kennedy is our other assistant. Carol was with me at Maryland, so I got to spend time with him. He is somebody that's always watching film, watching random films, knowing what's going on up in Canada. He just loves lacrosse that way, and he kind of stays involved. He's always watching different games, always talking about it. He spent a lot of his time in Division II. He was at Limestone when they won a bunch of their national championships, Division II Assistant Coach of the Year. He's been coaching for 11 years, and that's, I think, 4 national championships. So that's a pretty good resume there himself. We did have Colin Monroe on staff last year, and this year we're going to have Sean Ewart on staff. He came to us from Florida Southern. Both of them were sons of coaches, and you know, they kind of grew up with it in their blood as well. Excellent players, sons of coaches, the dream and drive to coach. So you know, we're really excited to have Sean on staff too. So you know, I think it's an awesome staff. We have a ton of fun in the office every day. We work hard, but those guys really love lacrosse too.
Yeah, former inside lacrosse intern Sean Ewart, I might add. And
yes, he did.
And it's funny because, you know, I do think that there's a little bit of a offense versus defense and pretty boy versus tough and rugged distinction forming there. You know, I don't want to put like the Bryant camouflage or work boots on Casey. I don't know the extent to which he was involved in that decision versus his boss at the time, but that certainly is an image that's associated. In Carroll's past, was his faceoff unit at some point referred to as like the pig pen or the hog pen?
Oh God, I have no idea.
Okay, well that could be totally off, but either way, if I'm misremembering I'm still associating with it.
We're blessed because Casey's done the face-off personnel at Bryant for years. He works majority with our face-off guys. Obviously, Bryant did awesome facing off.
Yeah.
Carol was coaching Luke Weirman when I was at Maryland.
Yeah.
And obviously, worked face-off guy. Luke was number one in the country. So we're really blessed to have two awesome face-off coaches on the same staff. So it's something I don't have to pay attention to a lot. And those guys are getting coached to the maximum ability, which is really special.
Yeah. So just kind of rolling it forward a little bit, you know, one of the elements of this that I think is so valuable to hear from you is what attracts you to a player? When you're watching a game, what is the typical thing that a player can do that would prompt you to take a positive note on him?
You know, you get that question a lot, and I think that it can be a little all over the place. But you want players to do something that's going to stand out. If they are the best athlete on the field, they're getting all the ground balls, they're dominating between the lines, that's going to stand out. If they are, 4 for 5 shooting and, letting absolute missiles go from 15, that's going to stand out. The one thing that I think is undervalued and very hard to identify recruiting is savviness and IQ. Savviness and IQ are definitely things that are harder to look at, and we try to identify both offensively and defensively. A lot of times we recruit guys for how athletic they are, and then we play them for how smart they are. And so if we can identify that savviness, IQ, intelligence in recruiting, I think that's really important. But it can be hard to see when you're watching half of a club game in 95 degree heat. With the offensive guys, we definitely try to lean toward making sure that they have a very good skill set. The defensive guy personnel, you tend to lean a little more toward athleticism, but I don't think there's exactly a secret sauce. And I think having a good mix of skill, athlete, guys that can sit down and play at goal line versus guys that can get out and get on gloves versus guys that can get the ball off the ground on the defensive end, guys that can feed versus guys that can shoot. I think having a good mix is important as well.
I want to drill down on something you just said, which is around savviness and IQ, because I think that it can go one of two ways. Savviness and IQ can put you in positions to make plays that a lower IQ or less savvy player wouldn't be able to make. And it can also mean that you don't make mistakes that lower IQ or less savvy players would make. Where do you fall on how important that is? It's a spectrum. So, if 5 is the baseline and 10 is the ability to make plays that a lower IQ player wouldn't make, and 0 is don't make mistakes that other players would make, where do you tend to fall on that spectrum?
I'm probably in recruiting in the middle of the spectrum.
Okay.
You like to think that you can help with decision making some and those things and IQ through your coaching,
Equally
and
both directions? Or
sometimes you like to think that you can may have a making better
right.
decisions and through your coaching. So if they're a little bit lower, you say, well, maybe we can coach them and get this here. At the same time, some people just naturally have a better athletic IQ and pick up on things faster. I would say playing wise, I probably lean toward playing guys with the athletic IQ, maybe more so than, other places. But I would say recruiting, again, if we can get those athletes, if we can get guys like that and teach them, that's obviously ideal. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. I don't think there's a exact science. You just kind of do the best you can.
Yeah.
You can look at the NFL has tons of coaches, every physical mental evaluation possible. They're drafting people after they've gone through puberty. They're basically young adults and they play a few months later. We're trying to guess on young men that haven't gone through puberty yet, a lot of them that we're seeing 30 minutes, maybe once or twice in a random game with a highlight film that they put together, and possibly like calling somebody that they have a good relationship with, like one of their club coaches or high school coaches, to say nice things about them. So it becomes a lot harder for us to identify that. So you just do the best you can.
Totally.
But if we can recruit those athletes and get them to play intelligently and play together, that's obviously, the top priority.
Well, so that's a nice segue into where I want to take this next. And I'm going to revisit that question that I just asked, because I think I have a better way to ask it again on the heels of this. So you were an architect of arguably the best offense of in the history of the game 2 years ago at Maryland. And there was a lot of conversation and study and, well, I guess those two things, observation and conversation around what you guys did. And it leads to a, oftentimes coaches are criticized for trying to force their system, in quotation marks, on top of or into like personnel that might not fit it, as opposed to coaches are typically lauded for creating a system that fits their personnel. And typically that's a comment that plays the results, right? And sometimes, and it's almost never, but it's almost never a binary. It's almost never totally one way or totally the other way. And on top of that, you know, it's also, I don't know, if that value structure is what it is, right? Like flexible coaches are a good thing. That's what we want to see. Then people are going to be predisposed or biased toward associating success with flexibility among coaches. But at the same time, like, there are some systems that are just going to be better than others. You know, there's almost like inherent truth to the idea that, you know, sharing the ball, which is what you guys in 22 were most commonly associated with in terms of like your primary attribute, was your unselfishness. You know, that's just going to be indisputable to some, at least, you know, in kind of conventional wisdom. This is a long way of asking, how do you recruit to guys who play the way you want to play versus how do you recruit to accumulating the best talent and then adjusting on the basis of what that talent is capable of doing?
We majority are going to try to just accumulate the best talent that we can. There's times where you might say, oh my, we need an attackman that can carry the ball, or we need somebody that can shoot, or we need a left-hander. But for the most part, we're going to just try to find the best talent we can and then let them play and see how it comes together. We try to be as unscripted as possible, as free-flowing as possible. Again, we want to let guys make decisions, not slide to this guy, not to that guy, or you're a Dodger, you're not a Dodger, or when he dodges, you know, when we set the big little pick behind, you know, you're going to crash to the front of the crease and you guys are going to stay as shooters. We want to allow guys to move freely and make decisions off the ball. And I think that allows them to play to their strengths. It allows the guys that like to dodge a little more from up top to get up top and dodge, the guys that want to invert to be behind. You know, and I think you can kind of see that, like, throughout, whether it was Maryland, you know, we could be Logan and DeMeo on the wing. It could be Kyle Long in the high wing. It could be him rolling to an invert or playing, or John Donville rolling off and picking for Keegan Kahn. There are so many options, and none of it, we called the same offense. I was not creating the first set play we ran, I think, all year. Was the championship game when we needed a little boost, one of those little flip down screens for Logan. I mean, the more the guys can play freely, the better. And I think it allows them to get to spots and kind of figure out how they're going to coexist together the best by themselves. And maybe you mentioned in practice, hey, you guys try to play over here, or hey, why don't you try to get to an invert and see if they catch it? And if not, then you kind of move the needle somewhere else. And you just mentioned some ideas and, you know, try to kind of figure out how it goes. And I think you can do the same thing on both ends, right? Like, hey, you know, maybe we can slide a little more, maybe a little less. Hey, you might be able to, you know, double team a little bit and allow guys to make decisions. And I think that that allows them to play within their personalities if you do accumulate the most talent possible.
So that leads to an interesting question around there are opportunities to coach guys, whether it be at third-party events or your own prospect days or other teams' prospect days, throughout the recruiting process. How do you and how does your staff value that compared to simply observing them either from film or on the sideline?
You definitely value it. You know, if you can coach the right guys and you know, hey, he's talented and he's, you know, great and you get to know him, I mean, that's awesome. It's so much better. And same thing, you know, if you hear from other coaches or other people, hey, I love this guy, I love coaching him. I think that's really valuable. You know, you still have to have the talent. You still have to want to make sure they have the talent. But it is something that, you know, you're going to take a better chance. You're going to maybe take somebody, you know, if you're between two people because you know them or you got to work with them or you know what type of person they are. Those are the things that whether you're working with them, whether it's just sitting down with them on a visit, those types of things, that's when that can really come into play, because making sure that somebody is somebody that you're going to want to coach and kind of going to fit in with you is important.
That actually perfectly segues into the next section of the conversation, which is around how to communicate. And September 1st, I guess one of the things that I'm interested in your perspective on is how do you assess where Providence sits on the spectrum of, you know, a lot of the conversations that we've had recently have been around the notion of recruiting the guys who recruit you and only recruiting the guys that recruit you. And one, you know, tends to be reality, and the other tends to be something that's looked at as a negative because it's lazy, essentially. Now, you know, whether or not that is true is kind of both dependent on the staff and the program, as well as the situation, as well as the players that are expressing interest. So, point being, when it, you know, based on the communication that you had with the 23s and 24s, realizing that with the 23s you were a little bit behind the eight ball, or maybe a lot behind the eight ball, and then with the 24s you were still a little bit scrambling when you started to kind of scramble, like getting your feet under you, whatever term you want to use, not necessarily feeling as comfortable as you do now. With all that as foundation, how have you found the conversation to go in terms of essentially trying to drum up interest versus reflecting interest or capturing interest from folks who already know what Providence is and want to be involved?
Yeah, you know, I'm not even going to say that maybe I analyze it as much as you are. You know, I go back to, we want guys that, one, have the ability and the talent to help us compete at the highest level. And compete for Big East championships and compete nationally. And that's what we want. We want to be able to compete for, you know, with anybody in the country. And how we find that doesn't really matter. If somebody's super interested and they're reaching out to us and they have that ability, that's great. If not, we can reach out to them and see if they're interested. I think we just need to find guys that, one, have that ability, and then, two, share those dreams, goals, and visions. And that might even be more important, because if they have a little less of the ability, but they share that dream, goal, and vision, they're going to work hard and they're going to want to, excel to your level. And so, you know, if they want that, then, you know, if they reach out to us and we get to find out, that's great. If we're reaching out to them, that's fine. It's always nice to hear from people that, you know, want to be part of your program. So that's awesome. And it definitely is a way for student athletes to contact and get in front of you. But that's what we kind of focus on. And, you know, we could take somebody September 2nd. We could take somebody a year and a half later. That part, I am completely inconsequential on. Recruiting doesn't start September 1st and end, November 1st. We're just going to keep kind of trying to find guys. We can't contact the 25 class now, or we can't contact people till September 1st of their junior year per NCAA rules. But it's not really to us even a start date. It's because we'll be contacting people for the first time for the next 18 months after that, 20 months after that, as we find people that we think can help us accomplish our goals and who may share our dreams, goals, and visions.
So from the standpoint of fish where the fish are, you know, you look at your 24 class, it's a pretty big class. It's not enormous, but it's pretty big. You've got a little bit of Baltimore, a little bit of Long Island, a decent amount of New England, and then you've got a commit from Florida, North Carolina, Southern Virginia, and a couple of other Minnesota, a couple other, you know, less traditional programs or less traditional hotbeds. Was that intentional, or was it just a function of how it all came together?
I think it's a function of how it all came together. Again, we just kind of go out. The really nice thing about Providence College is that we have a very strong local reputation, but we also have a really strong national reputation. And so I think there's a lot of areas that the student athletes are attracted to Providence, attracted to playing in the Big East, attracted to kind of hopefully building something and sharing our dreams, goals, and visions. And, you know, it doesn't really matter to me where they come from, who they are, their background. As long as they're good people, they want to work hard and they want to help us accomplish our goals and do the right things in the classroom and off the field that's going to represent Providence College across the right way. They're the type of people that we want here in Friartown, and we're just going to do our best to try to find them.
You spent the majority of your career working for head coaches who were very prominent recruiters, both in terms of their presence on the field as well as in terms of the manner in which they, you know, oversaw and conducted the communication with prospects. This is kind of ending where we began, but how have you adjusted to and how have you found it to, you know, be the guy who sits in the chair where ultimately you have to decide whether or not you want to offer an admission spot or offer a partial scholarship or offer a substantial scholarship to an individual player, and then be the one to take the commitment.
That part's been not really any different, although I can't say. Obviously, Coach Petro, Coach Tillman were very into the recruiting side. I that part has not been much of an adjustment. We work together, all four of us. We do the best we can. I am one of the head coaches that does want to get out and see guys and know who's recruiting and get a chance to see them the best I can. So, I probably take that from Coach Petro and Coach Tillman. I'm not one to sit back and have the assistants go out and then kind of just do the closing in the office. We try to work together. We try to keep communications open. We try to keep as many different little shared documents and things as we can to help us be as organized as possible. We just work together and it's just trying to get better every day. And I don't know if those decisions have really even came across my mind that much as it's just us trying to figure out how we're going to get better and how we're going to, you know, be the best lacrosse team we can be here and get the best student athletes to fit in with us here in Friartown. And there's a lot of really good players playing lacrosse right now. You know, we have lists of 150 attackmen and 150 middies, and there's a lot of really good players, and so I don't think it's a rush as much as just making sure you find guys that are going to fit in with you.
You teed me up perfectly for the last question. We have avoided talking in specifics about this class of 2025 for a couple reasons, chiefly because I want these conversations to be as evergreen as possible. You know, I want a parent of a 26 or a 27 or a 28 to be able to listen to these next year and the year after and get nearly as much value out of listening to them as they did in real time. That being said, this is the last podcast that's going to post before September 1st. And I already chirped you for being somebody who would dodge a question when I asked you about recruiting for 13 years. So I'm going to ask you now, how does the aggregate class of 25 stack up to the 22s, 23s, 24s in terms of overall quality and anything about it that's unique? Is it particularly strong at a position group? Is it particularly strong from one geography? Is it high academic, low academic? Come on, Bobby, give me something. I can already see this is what I've been dealing with. I can't believe now the audience knows exactly what I'm referring to.
I have no idea. I mean, it's a good class. There's some really good players. There's a lot of good players. I just said our list is really long. I mean, there's probably 500 players on it. We're not reaching out to 500 players on September 1st. We met this morning and Coach Broderson was going to do a podcast. Actually, Coach Kenny was running around and I looked at Coach Ewart and I was like, maybe we should just do it this way instead. Like, we're still going back and forth. With the best way to do it. Again, I don't see September 1st as like the go ahead. And there are a lot of good players playing lacrosse right now. There really are. And that's something that stands out to me as we go and watch. Fewer players probably separate themselves. And there's a lot of really just solid, good players. And who's going to end up being great in college is hard to figure out and hard to identify. And I don't know if it's possible to identify that, but I think that, hopefully we can identify at least who's going to fit in with us and who's going to kind of share those dreams, goals, and visions with us and who's going to work hard and be a good person and be a good student and fit in well in Friartown.
Robert Benson, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. We come for the analysis of there are a lot of really good lacrosse players out there.
There are a lot of really good lacrosse players. There are way too many for me to even keep track in my mind. I need spreadsheets after spreadsheets just to kind of remember who they are.
Well, we are looking forward to getting eyes on you this fall, seeing the Friars when they take the field again in the spring of 2024. And as always, really appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Terry. I really appreciate you having me and hope to see you soon.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.